Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Today is a huge day for the NBA, and even if it is a foregone conclusion that the Board of Governors will ratify, accept this proposal for a 22-team return in Orlando, it won't be a done deal until the votes are counted. So Thursday, a big day. The Board of Governors expected to vote on what would be the top eight teams in each conference, as well as the six teams that are within six games of the final playoff spot in each conference. And then there is this weird wrinkle about a play-in option for the nine seed. It's going to take some splaining. And so coming up in 15 minutes-ish, Keith Smith, who covers the NBA for Yahoo Sports, will join us. And we'll ask him to explain this weird play-in option. Here, I'll tell you what it is, but it took me some time to think about it. I'm still thinking about it. If there is a nine seed, okay, so the top eight in each conference go to the playoffs. If there's a nine seed or multiple teams, so it could be a nine seed, a 10 seed, yada, yada. But if there are teams that finish within four games of the eight seed, so the final playoff spot in each conference, they have a chance to play into the eight spot. But they have to beat the eight team twice in a row. It's weird. I'm still trying to figure it out, like I said.
What in the f*** was that?
Exactly. I have no idea. So Keith is going to have to explain it. But what we do know is that the 22 teams initially will get back to Orlando, or get to Orlando, sorry. We'll get back on the court. We'll be in Orlando. They'll play eight regular season games. So they won't finish out their regular season completely, and honestly, they can't because there are teams that aren't going to Orlando, but they'll play eight more what are considered regular season games, and then they will set the playoff seeds. Except for these nines, within four games, they have a chance then to earn their way in with a pseudo type of play-in tournament. So the eight seeds could see play-in tournaments, but only if the teams that are in the nine spot are within four games.
Told you everything I know.
Yeah, I seriously. Thank you, Coach Belichick. July 31st is the target date for the return. Game seven would be no later than October 12th. A regular season of eight more games per team, and I heard so many funny explanations of this on Wednesday. Someone was trying to explain it on Twitter by saying, well, they're just going to play the games left on their schedule unless the teams that aren't on their schedule aren't in Orlando, in which case they'll just skip to the next team on their schedule. But what if that team already has a game going on? So it's odd. It's going to take some major organizational skills and attention to detail to work it all out, because clearly there will be a disparity. Some of the teams that are in Orlando will have let's say, 6 of the 8 on their schedule, meaning whatever's left of their regular season, they're going to play 8 of those games. Maybe 6 of those teams will actually be in Orlando, and they'll have to skip around to fill out the 8 games.
The guy is drunk.
Dear God, I'm confusing myself, for heaven's sakes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. This is why we need Keith, because I don't have the grasp on the format. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact the team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Did you know Orlando's about to be a super popular place for pro sports teams and their athletes? The MLS is also going to Orlando to resume its season. And that's in 3 weeks. So MLS, soccer, the athletes are supposed to get to Orlando within 3 weeks. And they're also going to Disney's Wide World of Sports complex. So it's huge. Lots of fields, many courts and practice facilities and all that jazz. But the MLS almost had a lockout of its own. Okay, this is mean. But if the MLS has a lockout and no one notices, did it actually happen? It's like the whole, if a tree falls in the woods and there's no one there to hear it, did it actually make a noise? There was nearly a lockout in Major League Soccer. But guess what happened? The athletes agreed to a pay cut. They agreed to financial concessions. And now they can return to the field. So they had to renegotiate their CBA and the length of their collective bargaining agreement because the MLS commissioner says that the league itself is going to lose $1 billion. So much of their revenue is based on game day. At game day, meaning fans in the stands and game day elements. And so without fans in the stands and without the, you know, the games they've lost, they stand to lose as a league $1 billion. And while many of these MLS teams are attached to football teams, NFL teams, or, you know, they have also billionaire owners who own other sports entities, $1 billion is still $1 billion. And so the athletes finally agreed to take a revenue sharing plan, which is something baseball has not agreed to. But they're going to take 5% pay cuts across the board. And also there'll be a cap on bonuses. The economic hit will be absorbed by both owners and players, which is a common ground that baseball owners and players haven't yet agreed to. The players think they've already taken enough of a concession. The athletes are saying, we're not taking any more pay cuts. The owners are saying, well, then we'll play 50 games and you can have all of your money under the prorated salaries. It's just, gosh, it gives me a headache to keep talking about it. So MLS headed to Orlando for a tournament of sorts. We have yet to hear the exact details, but within 3 weeks, soccer players are expected to be at Disney in Orlando, and the NBA will be rushing in a few weeks after that. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. 855-212-4CBS. And then also on Twitter, A-Law Radio, plus our Facebook page. In light of everything that's happened in our nation over the last week, we had a caller say, there's no distractions right now. There isn't. Now, there are a lot of people trying to get back to work, but coronavirus has been pushed to the back burner, and there are no sports, and there's no entertainment. There are no new movies, really. You can't really go anywhere you want to go. Travel is way down. And so this is the number one topic, the number one subject, the peaceful protest, the death of George Floyd, the charges that the officers face, the looting, the rioting. Like this is the conversation right now in the United States of America. So I'm asking you, you know, personally in your own lives, or maybe professionally with your coworkers, how are you talking about it? What types of conversations are you having together on Twitter, Facebook, and then 855-212-4227. There's been so much that's been said, and it's hard, right, to pull one comment here, one comment there. But often, though, as I listen to various athletes, to various coaches speak, I try to hang on to, you know, a point here or a point there. And some of what I've heard so far over the last few days from Dave Roberts about how You know, we talk about getting back to normal, but normal isn't good enough anymore. I think that's so huge. Pete Carroll saying it's not enough to be non-racist. You have to be anti-racist. Marquise Goodwin on Twitter, it's not black versus white. It's everyone versus racism. That's so important, too. And the desire, it's part of the desire, but also the commitment to keep talking. We got to keep talking. We can't let it fall by the wayside again. We got to keep talking. Let's talk to Darnell, who's in Pennsylvania. Welcome to After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, Amy, can you think of some easy topics tonight?
No.
Oh, okay. But listen, I wanted to address Bill's comments. Here's the difference between the NAACP and Mothers Against Drunk Driving. The NAACP is a black organization fighting a black cause, okay? Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, it covers all races, all ethnicities.
Mm-hmm.
So their fight is a different fight. Okay, they have a different voice. It's difficult to fight a fight where you really don't have much of a voice in the fight that you're having, because you're trying to reach the ears of people who are not common or not a part of your fight. Okay, so that's the difficulty with any kind of organization like the NAACP or any other organization where they're not the ones that's in control, okay? And that's the difference. So that's the reason why you see more progress with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, because, you know, again, the kids that are getting killed by drunk drivers are black, white, giant, you know, all races, mm-hmm. you know? So that makes a big difference, and that's a problem. But as it relates to our law enforcement, we're always going to have a challenge with not just law enforcement, but with any kind of institution who polices itself. That should never happen where, again, an institution who impacts their entire world or environment polices itself when something goes wrong within their organization. When we can change that, that'll make a difference.
Meaning there need to be outside checks and balances.
Sure, you have no checks and balances when an organization is allowed to police itself and that be the final outcome. There is no checks or balance there. Okay, and then the last thing I'd like to say is this. Racism, you know, has existed from time immemorial, and we understand that. But here's the thing today, as it relates to racism, I would ask anyone to answer this question, and this is rhetorical, so you don't have to answer it. But if I'm talking to anyone, I would say to them, listen, to answer this question, do you have any challenge with your child marrying somebody outside of your race? Okay? And if you can't answer that question, then you need to look yourself in the mirror.
Wait, if you can't answer it, or if the answer is yes?
No, I'm saying if you can't answer the question, okay, whether I have no problem with my child marrying a person of a different race, okay, then you need to examine why you can't answer that question. If your answer is yes, I don't have no challenge with it, okay, then I say, then you probably okay. You know, you probably understand that, hey, we all, you know, God's children. Okay, so I'm accepting of everyone and anyone. But if you say, nah, absolutely not, then I say look yourself in the mirror and examine yourself. Mm.
It is an interesting litmus test that you posed, Darnell.
You know, so that's what I say. And, you know, let me just say this and then I'm done. Drew Brees and, you know, the different athletes, you know, I hope that some way and somehow that, you know, they can come to an understanding and that, you know, this situation doesn't, you know, end up on the football field or any other field, you know, but that somehow, some way, Drew and others that have that understanding, you know, could, as you were saying, as it relates to your own life, you know, how your eyes had to be open. Yeah, and I don't fault Drew Brees, just like I don't fault you until you came into that understanding, you know, that it's not about what happens to you and what you have done. It's only because of your skin. That's when it becomes a real, real problem. And until Drew Brees can, you know, hear that, come past what he grew up with, what he has learned over the years, he's going to have some challenges from this point on as it relates to dealing with any minority group. And I don't care how successful you are on the football field or in life, you're going to have challenges because you put it out there.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right, Darnell, thank you so much for your phone call and for taking the time to share your opinions with us. Good to talk to you. And yes, a lot of good points that we've heard tonight on the show. Some of you are also finding us on social media, and you're welcome to go and respond to other people. I tend to not so much put my thoughts on social media because I don't trust social media, and also because to see words on a screen is not the same as having, you know, the tone and the emotion behind it, and even the nonverbal cues that that happen when we communicate in person, or I mean, I guess over a Zoom call. But yeah, I try not to summarize my thoughts about something so heavy and so hard and so difficult and so painful in 280 characters. Now, there are times when I do, but I don't think this conversation is one to have over social media. I don't think that's effective. I think it creates more problems than actually does good. Coming up next, there's some problems for the NBA to have to dissect and solve and then get back to playing basketball. We'll welcome Yahoo Sports NBA insider Keith Smith to answer my questions about what play-in? I don't get it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
White on the left wing, down the left alley, blur to the right hand. It is short. Rebounded by Paul George. 5-on-4 for the Clippers if they hurry. Bounce pass in the lane. Leonard to the basket. He throws it down with the right hand. The 2-on-3 connection has put the Clippers in front.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Noah Eagle on Clippers Radio. We haven't heard any play-by-play. Well, except for the kind that we saw in The Last Dance and the classic games that are being broadcast on various networks during this hiatus of the NBA and really most professional team sports. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're pleased to welcome Keith Smith, who covers the NBA for Yahoo Sports and some other outlets as well. And Keith, what is the likelihood that today's vote of the Board of Governors is a pass as opposed to a fail?
Somewhere right around 100%.
Okay, good.
It's very likely that this could pass unanimously.
How do you like the 22-team format as opposed to the others that the commissioner was considering?
Yeah, I was fine with either the 20 or 22-team format. I think they're pretty good compromises as far as giving teams that were still in the playoff race an opportunity to make up ground, as well as, you know, still honoring what had happened already in the regular season. So I think that they really reached good middle ground here. I like the idea too that the 8 seeds will have an advantage when it comes to potentially getting into the playoffs, because those teams have to make up ground on them then, plus beat them twice if they're going to get in. So I think the NBA did a good job here at taking care of all interests, as well as creating enough teams to be there to create enough regular season games to give those teams a good warm-up for the postseason.
Well, that's kind of the part where I'm a little bit confused. How are they going to do this when they don't have all the teams in Orlando, and yet they want them to play another 8 regular season games? What happens if the games on their schedule can't be played because the teams aren't there?
Yeah, so it sounds like what they'll do is you will progress with whatever your schedule was, you know, remaining. And if when you hit a team that isn't there, you'll skip them. And then you'll go to the next team that is there in Orlando at Walt Disney World. You'll go to the next team, and then you just keep doing that all the way through. When you get to the end, there's a couple teams that are short, if that's the way it ends up playing out, which are the Lakers, the Trailblazers, the Magic, and the Heat. But those games can be made up by having those teams play each other, and that's how I think you're going to see the rest of the season get finished.
All right, so that's one question, Keith. What about, and you just referenced it a little bit, the 9 seed having an opportunity. Is this something in addition to the regular season games, or is it in the course of them finishing out their 8 regular season games, the 9 seed has a chance to take over a playoff spot?
A little bit of both. It is. So what they're going to do is they're going to play these 8 regular season games. Mm-hmm. If the 9th seeded team is within 4 games of the 8th seeded team, so 4 games or less, then what they'll do is those 2 teams will advance into a mini play-in. And what will happen is the 9th seeded team will have to beat the 8th seeded team twice, or the 8th seeded team beats the 9th seeded team once, and then that will be what ends it.
How do you like that little wrinkle?
Yeah, I could have done with just, you know, play out through the 8 games that are left, but that was kind of the compromise. 8 games is, you know, half-ish of what teams had left, so that was the compromise, is play those 8 games, and then if we're still kind of close, then we'll do this play-in, and it could create some excitement if that's where we land.
Keith Smith covers the NBA for Yahoo Sports with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. I have been dying to ask someone inside the NBA community this question, so I hope that you have an answer for me. Why are they waiting until the end of July? Why?
Yeah, so there's a couple things at play there. We thought it was going to come down that June 1st. Adam Silver is going to say that teams can mandatorily recall their players to their home markets. Right now, everything in those markets where it's open, it's all voluntary basis right now. That has not happened as of yet. And the belief is they're so close to getting this return to play plan finished that they were going to finish that up. So what it sounds like is going to happen is probably by maybe the end of this week, early next week, Adam Silver will say, okay, you can mandatory recall all your players. It's going to take a little while because players are spread all around the country, as well as, you know, several players they've returned to their home countries. So it could take a little bit for guys to get back. So they're going to make sure they give everybody enough time to get back. Then they're going to let the teams do some workouts that progress from individual workouts into team workouts. Then at the beginning of July, we're going to see them do a 2-week training camp in their home market. Then everyone's going to pack up, move to Orlando in the middle of July, and then that's when they'll do 2 more weeks there, and then they'll start play on July 31st.
Wow. So the idea of 25 days, do you remember going back, it's got to be now 2 months or sometime in the last 2 months, where the NBA had kind of put this idea out there that they would need 25 days to get ready to play again? That is not even close to being accurate.
No, so yeah, and I think that got a really pretty quick immediate pushback from trainers within the league who said, wait a minute, we haven't seen some of these guys. And, you know, the sad reality is some of these players, they may live in high-rise apartments and the like and have had no access to, you know, real fitness equipment. Some of them had no access to a hoop the entire time that they were gone. Now on the flip side, as these facilities have opened back up for these voluntary workouts, there's been a pretty good attendance, and a lot of the guys are in better shape than what was expected. So that's been a positive development. But they're trying to make sure that they do everything to avoid too quick of a ramp up, because the last thing they want to do is get everybody back. Everybody's excited to get going, and then somebody, you know, we have a rash of pulled hamstrings and the like that start putting players on the shelf.
Here is an interesting question, one also that I've spent some time contemplating. If you are the team that makes it to the NBA Finals from the East or the West, you are there in Orlando at the Y World of Sports Complex from, as you point out, mid-July, when they will need to get to Florida, through mid-October. How realistic is it that none of these guys are going to leave?
that's a question that's out there. The thing I say is, whoever, you know, is done with this season by the end of October, instead of saying, you know, I'm going to Walt Disney World, they're going to say, I'm going home. they're going to be really, you know, excited to say that. And so, you know, it is a very long stretch. Now, what is interesting is I've been talking to players around the league, especially as it started to really look more real and timelines started to kind of come into focus. A lot of these guys are really taking the approach of, this is a business trip, and we're in the playoffs, and a lot of these guys have said, you know, if we're going to do this, I'm going to go there to win. And there's no Golden State Warriors inevitability hanging over the season. There are seven to eight teams who legitimately believed, if things had broke their way, that they could win the title. Now those teams are even more bolstered in that, because you have this, you know, hey, it may not matter. There's no home court advantage and those kind of things. And if we play, you know, to the best of our ability, we could be in the mix here. And that's something that I think the players are going to take very seriously as they go. And that's going to, you know, be the mindset of, you know, I want to go. And then for those guys who are on those real true contender teams, nobody wants to be the guy who messed up LeBron James' chance at a championship. So you couldn't, you know, stay in the grounds and, you know, relax there.
Mm. Okay, Keith, one more question. And you bring up like leaving and the risk that goes with that. If they would take that choice and then would end up getting the virus, bringing it back. The commissioner had already indicated to the teams, if you think one positive test is going to shut the whole thing down, or if you think it should, then we don't even bother doing this because it's not worth it. What does happen, though, if there's a positive test or if there are a couple of guys who end up with the virus?
Yeah, so and you're absolutely right. When Adam Silver talked with both the Board of Governors as well as with the players, when he did the big call with the NBA players, he said to them, you know, and not in a way of to be, you know, hard on them or anything, as far as, you know, well, we should or shouldn't do this. It was more of the, we're going to shut it down for one thing. That is fine, and I understand that perspective, but then let's not do this. Mm-hmm. So what they have all along have said is, if there's one or two players who contract the virus, you treat it much like you would an injury or an illness at any other point in the season. That player gets shut down. They go into a quarantine for 2-week period. And then as long as everything is good after that and their team's still going along, then they can rejoin their team and play. The question that is still out there, though, that has not been answered to my liking, and I'm kind of curious, and I think that could be something that would shut it down, is what happens if an entire team, you know, all of a sudden comes down and you've got 7 or 8 cases on the same team. I think at that point, that's when the NBA would really have to look at it as, okay, this is no longer a manageable thing. We've had a true outbreak, and that may be where that type of, you know, situation could shut it down. But they're hopeful of, get them there healthy, test them regularly while they're there, keep everyone healthy, and that they can finish this season with little incident.
Whew, but it requires discipline, does it not? It requires eyes on the prize. Keith Smith, NBA, is where you can find him on Twitter. Great information this morning. Thank you for joining us live. Covers the league for Yahoo Sports and Real GM. And we look forward to talking actual games with you once they ramp back to Orlando. Keith, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Stay safe, you and yours.
You too. That's wow, good information from Keith. He definitely knows his stuff and explains it really well. So there's a lot there. But the NBA has chosen the two-month plan because they believe that that is likely to lessen the number of pulled hammies and other injuries, and because they got pushback from trainers. 25 days is not enough. So end of July it is, peeps, before the NBA is back. A-Law Radio to find me on Twitter, also on our Facebook page. What conversations are you having with family and friends about what's happening in our nation this week? Because those conversations are so important.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II. Is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better. And that we are all part of the solution.
We're done asking, Drew. And people who share your sentiments, who express those and push them throughout the world, the airwaves, are the problem. And it's unfortunate because I considered you a friend. I looked up to you. You're somebody who I had a great deal of respect for. But sometimes you should shut the f*** up.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Powerful emotions, strong words from Malcolm Jenkins, who said he recorded multiple videos in response to Drew Brees' interview on Yahoo Finance. If you missed it yesterday, Drew was asked a specific question about kneeling during the national anthem. He was asked by the interviewer, the host, what he would think or what his reaction would be if the NFL had a resurgence in players kneeling during the national anthem as a sign of protest. And he stated a viewpoint that he stated many times before. This is not something new for Drew Brees. He has explained in the past. I could have told you why Drew Brees doesn't kneel for the national anthem because he's mentioned his grandfathers before. The fact that they both served and he honors them by standing. But in saying I will never agree with it and in pointing to the military piece, while it was his perspective, he wasn't saying everyone has to feel this way. He came across tone deaf. And in a week when there are protests happening all over the country, in a week where there is so much emotion and so much of a spotlight once again on the need for protests, he brings it back to the military and not disrespecting the flag because of the military. And that was an argument that angered so many people going back. He has the right to stand. He has the right to feel as though it's disrespectful if you don't, disrespectful to the military. But his comments came across as preachy and tone deaf, and they completely missed the mark of what's happening this week around our nation. So does he have a right to feel that way? Absolutely. Is his opinion as a human being, his feeling, his emotion, his thought process about the national anthem just as legitimate as anyone else's? Absolutely. But in his comments, he didn't leave room for anyone else's. And I believe that's what angered so many people. But also the fact that it was brought right back to the military and disrespect for the flag when that is not how the protests were intended, and it just incited that argument again and the emotions of Malcolm Jenkins, who, by the way, is now a teammate of Drew Brees, and responded on Instagram. Same thing with Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. And you can imagine they're going to need to have some tough conversations, some conversations that might be even more emotional in person when they finally get back to the point where they can meet together as a team. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. There was another teammate of Drew Brees and Sanders and Jenkins and Thomas that tweeted his own response. And I wanted to read this one because I feel like Marcus Davenport put it very well. Drew wasn't talking about the current protest, the riots, or really anything besides his feelings on kneeling during the national anthem. He even explained what they were, the basis, and that he actually stands with us. Do we have to agree with him entirely? No. So Marcus understands what Drew was saying, except the way that he delivered that message, tone deaf, is what I keep coming back to. And just so you know, I used that same phrase about Blake Snell a couple weeks ago. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line, brought to you by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback. For info and eligibility. And I've been asking you, in light of the fact that the conversation is so important, what conversations have you had with people in your own lives? And I don't mean social media, that unless your only, you know, contact on social media is with people in your own personal circle. Maybe it's your coworkers, but social media is not a legit conversation. It's a disaster most of the time. And it's because all you see is a bunch of words in print on a screen or on a phone. It's not the same as having a conversation with emotion and with the ability to explain and to kind of wrestle with what are very difficult topics and scary topics for a lot of people. Let's be honest. There are some people who would rather do anything but have a conversation about racism because it's hard. But anything worth having is worth fighting for and worth sacrificing for. And I think it's come to that point again. Can we have these conversations and can we move this forward? Can there be real sustainable change? If not, then it's a waste and it's awful. And what George Floyd's daughter said about daddy changed the world, daddy changed the world, that falls by the wayside. And that's unconscionable and it's not acceptable. Let's talk to Roger, who's in Wisconsin. Welcome to After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
Hi, coming to you from my super secret semi-truck in central Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Ironic, your show is having the topic that it is. I haven't been able to see my kids in since the whole social unrest started, so I'm going to see them today, and I'm going to have to explain and guide them and give them some information. And it's a complicated issue for me because I find myself, I'm typically socially kind of to the left, member of the ACLU, but at the same time, I feel on the right side that when we stand for the national anthem, it's more like a willingness to unify within the country, and I feel like the drive they might have to take a knee symbolizes their willingness to be divisive rather than unify.
Except, Roger, I will say this. I understand your perspective, but isn't that the point? That there isn't equality, that there hasn't been unity, and that we haven't been unified, and I mean, that's kind of the point. You make the point perfectly, is that the protesters are trying to do is highlight an area where there hasn't been equality and where we haven't been on the same side and we haven't been on the same page. So I kind of think that's the point.
I understand. One of the points that I'm going to make to my daughter later today is, they'll say what happened, they'll see the video, they'll be aware of it all, and then what a lot of people say is, well, tearing the place up and burning it down and looting and all that is not okay. And I'll point out that after hundreds of years of oppression, you're probably going to get this kind of response out of any group. under these circumstances. So I'm going to do my best to give them a full spectrum view of it all.
Good.
With my personal opinions interjected, but enough room for them to process all the information and make up their own minds.
How old are they?
13 and 10.
Oh, gosh. I mean, they understand a lot, and yet still you have to be really careful about what you say, because, you know, you have to be able to get, you know, to get them to understand it the way that a 10-year-old processes things. Gosh.
Exactly. You know, when it comes to the flag and stuff like that, I personally was in Cuba 20 years ago and witnessed the way things are there, and it's not a good situation. I'm sure I don't need to tell you that.
No.
But while I was there, it made me very much appreciate what we have here in the United States. So that's what helped shape my perspective.
And sure.
All I can do is give some of my perspective to my kids. I think that's the thing to do.
Absolutely. Well, and we are a product of how we are raised, for better or for worse. You know, color is just one element of who we are. But our backgrounds, where we were raised, how we were brought up, who our parents were, you know, all those things, the experiences of school and our, you know, our careers, they all make us what we are. And so you're right. You can only speak from your own experience. Roger, thank you so much for your phone call. I'm glad you're safe, and I'm glad you get to be home with your kids after a week away. Our phone number always the same, and we're glad that you've used it tonight. We've had full phone lines. In fact, I was planning, and I'll have to go back and apologize. I was planning on sharing this really awesome conversation, really awesome story with you tonight, this morning, tonight, about a pro golfer who is attempting to win a card on the LPGA Tour, but she put aside golf this spring because she's a registered nurse. And she left Atlanta, where she trains and where she play another golf tour that she's on. The Symetra Tour was suspended, of course, like everything else in sports. But she put aside her training to get a job in her native Ann Arbor, in her native Michigan, so that she could be on the front lines during the fight against coronavirus. So putting the golf, her livelihood, her dreams on the back burner so she could serve others as a nurse. It's an incredible story, and Sarah Hoffman is really neat to talk to, and she was so candid in her perspective and in her emotions and why she did what she did. But I wanted to make sure that you all heard her story and not, you know, not just me shoving it in amongst all of these other topics. And these are serious and they're heavy. And many of you, not the guy with the aromatic candles in the shape of junk, but, you know, that was my attempt at humor. If it fell far short, Chris, do you think it fell far short?
No, that was wild from beginning to end.
Anyway, you'll hear Sarah Hoffman's story on our next show, as well as Gene Steratore. Speaking of a hoot, that man is a hoot. And the CBS NFL rules analyst will join us on the show as well. So thanks for all of your calls, your tweets, your Facebook posts, your honesty, your candor. We'll talk to you again soon after Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.